You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 28th of February 2015 on Monocle 24.
Raunchy cover girls or dashing dandies to sell copies, sex tips to fill those pages or seductive editorial to pack those inches. A gentleman's journal or a lad's mag, either more macho or more manicured, the male sector of the newsstand is changing and we're here to review it on The Stack. As consumers become ever more discerning, we'll see what appeals to those XY chromosomes in print. Are hair and makeup sections getting as large as their female counterparts? Or is the Butch revival on course to keep editors in line? Plus, we'll hear from a Polish magazine that offers a print product, especially for dads.
We believe that the idea of fatherhood is in the process of being reinvented. And we see that not only in Poland, but around the world.
All that and plenty more besides on this men's magazines edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, before we get into our manly magazine discussion, let's look back to the beginning of the week and to the relaunch of one staple of American supplements. At 200 plus pages, the relaunched New York Times magazine, let's make that Weekend magazine, is not only a hefty read, but an ambitious commitment by the newspaper. Classic, sober, and with three staples down the spine, it seems to be throwing the gauntlet down to the rest of the world in terms of print journalism. As soon as it came in, I sat down with our editor, Andrew Tuck, and our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell, to review the relaunched New York Times magazine.
Well, this past Sunday was a bit of a big one for the New York Times. We heard, of course, that there was going to be this relaunch. And so we raced out, of course, in London. If you have contacts at airlines, you can probably get a copy on Sunday evening. But we got ours Monday morning here in London. Andrew, you have a copy of the relaunched edition. I think 200 plus pages, which is quite something for a weekend supplement. Certainly would put many titles to shame on this side of the Atlantic or any of the Australian supplements as well. First reactions?
Well, many of the things that they've obviously worried about and equivocated about are small changes that to the average reader who's not concerned about the world of design will probably glide past them. I like the fact that they have stuck to doing a print magazine that looks very classic, that is actually very, very sober. But what they've tried to do on the, you know, they're very involved in the digital world. They're a kind of digital first in many other instances, media organization. And what I like is they've done that quietly. So there are many of the stories you can now listen to as podcasts. Some of the interviews which appear in here you can now see in longer format on the site. So without trying to kind of give up the game in print, the opposite. They say this will be the most important, they believe, print publication to come out this year. We've got something coming in the summer, which might beat them. But but they point out 4 million people still read this magazine every single week. Mm. And I think they've stayed true to the idea of doing print while also managing to kind of lick the other worlds of digital.
Mm. Rich, what are your first impressions?
I like it. I like the fact that it's hefty. I like the fact that that's not far off what you could get on newsstand. It reminded me a little bit of the old supplement D, you know, which was a really amazing, you know, weekly supplement.
But it still was around as well.
Still
people
around.
Shouldn't forget. Yeah.
And I think the redesign is nice. It's quiet, but I think they've upped the game on every level, really. I mean, just they've gone heavier on the paper stock. It doesn't feel like a flimsy supplement, especially when you hold the two of them together. You've got the previous one.
Nice to see someone buying more expensive paper for once.
And do you think this throws down the gauntlet? We're sitting in London. Whether if you're at any number of newspapers here, you're probably sitting in conference on a Monday looking across the week, hoping that, there will also maybe be a call from someone in a very senior business position saying, maybe we should look at the Sunday Times London. Maybe we should revisit what the Telegraph magazine is doing, what the Guardian is doing. Do you think that this actually starts to stir something internationally?
What's interesting, I think, for, say, UK newspapers, some of them have kept doing quite good supplements. But this is, you know, if they can remain anywhere near this thickness in the coming weeks, they have something that's truly interesting. Because I think what we've noticed with newspapers is, you know, they're not making the money they'd like to from advertising online. That certainly isn't happening. in the newspaper, they're still making some good money. But what's happened is you have these properties like How to Spend It, the New York Times magazine, which are quite good at mopping up a lot of cash for their owners. And I think that that's what people are going to think about, because, yes, of course, this is an opportunity for some very good journalism, some wonderful photography, but that's here to pull in advertising revenue. Mm. And I think it does a reasonably effective job at that.
That was our discussion a little bit earlier, me talking to our editor, Andrew Tuck, and our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell, when the New York Times magazine thumped down on our desks and, of course, on the front patch. Now, in a few moments, we're going to be talking to two other gentlemen. Robert Bound is going to be here, also Peter York. And we're going to be looking at all of these men's magazines assembled in front. Stay with us. Now, as promised at the top of the show, we're going to have a look at the men's offering today on the Stack, and I can think of no better two men to help us do that than my very dear guest, off to my left. He calls himself a management consultant. I would say that sort of, I don't say it's sort of downgrade, because it's sort of what you do, but I think sort of author, broadcaster, arbiter of good taste, Peter York. I'm also joined by our culture editor, Rob Bound. Rob, before we go to Peter, how would you do it? I mean, for people who've never been gathered around, certainly the speakers and listening to this program and when Mr. York's been on, how would you describe Peter York?
Well, if Peter York's a management consultant, then I don't think there's a single thing he can't manage. But presumably the most important part of that is the emollients of effort, not putting, you know, not seeming to put in an effort. Peter's never got a bad back, because he knows how to bend properly, right?
Well, he does, yeah. And certainly also we have some fine chairs in the studio as well. I actually think one of the great things about an Eames chair like these ones is that they do keep you rather erect.
Yes,
I thought that was just the way you were sitting.
Right. Well, or we'll talk about the package you brought in the studio in a later moment. But anyway,
oh, knockabout Britcom.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. We had to talk about men's magazines. Yeah.
And what better place to start? You had a bit of a warm up before we came into the studio, and we talked.
Now we know why Peter hasn't got a bad back.
Right. Exactly. We have. We were looking at a variety of titles. This is the season, of course. I'm not just of the men's mag, but it's a season, of course, of anyone who wants to get a bit of money, outside back cover, opening spreads from the, not just the fashion industry, but the luxury industry in general. You've got Baselworld on the rise. You've got all kinds of new gear going into the shops, hence a lot of thick magazines. And Rob, you've picked up Esquire, which is not so thick.
I was going to say, I was just looking to see what's on their outside back cover, thinking about gobbling up those watch,
We're looking at the British edition of Esquire.
This is British Esquire, and it's got a Gucci ad on the back. It's perfectly nice. But it's thin as anything, and this is the February edition, which I know, you know, historically tends to be the thinnest one of the year, isn't it, for advertising and all the rest of it. I'm just a bit struck by, it's a collector's issue, which is Icons of Style. This isn't the black book thing that Esquire UK often do. This is the actual thing. And I just tend to think, a bit like a lot of music publishing does, it seems you can only sell a magazine if you put an old, you know, someone dead on the cover. There's a black and white picture of James Dean. I mean, Icons of Style, can they not think beyond 1955?
No, and
it's a strange thing.
I also think that James's quiff really sort of gets in sort of the way of the choir bit.
Ezra.
Exactly.
As
Ezra magazine.
It's quite a nice cover, but it's weirdly retro.
Peter, I mean, this Esquire alongside GQ, these were two of the trailblazers in this country in sort of the traditional glossy sector. Of course, we had the likes of The Face and lots of other magazines that were doing something very different. Your view, I know you like GQ. Esquire, are you picking it up?
I like it too. And it's got a slightly different emphasis. And somewhere in there is Adrian Gill giving advice to the lovelorn and the hopeless.
I saw A.A. Gill on Sex on the cover.
Yes, it's very, very good.
I saw A.A. Gill at Fisher's for lunch yesterday.
Oh, yeah, did you?
Yeah.
Was he dressed like a real person?
Yeah, he was dressed. He actually looked taller, though, and I was trying to sort of see if there was, I don't know, a stacked heel or something.
You have a look under the cloth?
I try. Well, no, I tried as he was sort of striding out. But anyway, I couldn't quite go inside.
You'll have to go somewhere with
it's called Uncle Dysfunctional. Who better than him to do this? Because he's been through the wars generally himself. So you can give people very good advice.
Is that one of the things that this type of magazine can still do? Now, whether one has to really open up their pocketbook to bring Mr. Gill into their pages, or it just, it seems like the correct place rather than if you're a new upstart to put him there, Peter.
Yes, it is the correct place. And you can't imagine him in a temporary pop-up conceptual magazine, can you?
No.
But it wouldn't be right.
We've got The Rake sitting here. The Rake has a very toothy, quite tactile cover. They've certainly used a lot of specials.
What do you call this?
They use a lot of silvery, goldy, foily.
Yes. We have Mr. Cuccinelli on the cover. Now, could A.A. Gill end up in a magazine like this?
No, he couldn't possibly end up in a magazine like this. It's too, what Americans used to call piss elegant.
Is it piss elegant because it comes from Southeast Asia?
Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, it comes from Singapore.
Well, it looks like a certain generation of it. Anyway, well, it's all those things. Actually, inside are some quite interesting things and people I now see.
Mm.
There's some those old beaten photographs. There's a perfectly nice and interesting thing. There's a cover. Does it no favours at all?
It looks a little bit like one of those, like a freebie that you get from Foxton's that comes to your letterbox. Mm. There's a lot of there's a lot of foiling on the cover,
right.
As Peter was saying. It's not.
There's a lot of that retro, seizing on retro acknowledged values. What do they call them? You know, that recognised values. There's a lovely acronym for it, except I can't remember it, in the trade. And that's what you do when you use those 60s faces, the 60s faces inside.
Right. Rob, aside from paying it the fine compliment that it looks like something from an estate agent's.
Do you know what I mean there? Do you know what I mean about that cover?
No, I do.
It's got a kind of... It's
the foils on the title.
It's really retro, isn't it? I mean, it's all... There's vintage photography in here. The photo shoots are kind of like... You know, private eye, a snooping private eye. It's quite a retro thing.
It's a clever play, though, that it's, you know, here's, it's a lot of advertising, and it looks like it's, you know, it's doing all right, getting the big brands in there. And is it a clever play because it's probably something that appeals to Mr. Cuccinelli, maybe. It's not going to be the young media planner who's sitting at one of the major multinational agencies, but Mr. Cuccinelli is going to say, I think we need to advertise in this magazine.
Yeah, maybe the thing that, I think you're probably right, something that sums it up is maybe some of these fashion spreads, which have, you know, wear a bow tie, but wear it with a leather jacket.
Mm.
Or there's like double-breasted denim jackets.
Is there?
Yeah.
I don't need to see it.
There's a kind of lot of funny stuff.
I don't need to see it.
You don't need to see it.
But there's interesting things like this, which is quite nice, which is Cecil Beaton.
That's lovely.
With the stones.
That's a bit of borrowed interest, borrowed value there, isn't it?
So that's the sort of thing. I think actually perhaps the cover lets it down. I mean,
The cover definitely lets it down. It's more interesting than the cover. Mm. It's probably right for its audience because it's introducing its audience to things that they don't know about.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're going to head off to Poland in a moment, but before that, we should probably pack our bags during this break. Stay with us.
The brand new M24 iPhone app brings you the full radio offering from Monocle 24. Listen live to our 4 daily news programmes or catch the freshest tunes on our playlist. And of course, there's the Time Shift, where you can delve into our show archive and listen at your leisure. All our great magazine programmes, covering everything from international affairs to culture, design to urbanism, food and drink to entrepreneurship. It's all available anytime on the new, free Monocle 24 iPhone app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, our culture editor, Robert Bound, and the author, broadcaster, and commentator, and also management consultant, Peter York. Now, with an editorial entirely geared towards men with children, Polish publication Fathers from Warsaw, maybe one of a kind, to expand on what it sees as a huge readership of fathers, the magazine published its first issue in English at the end of last year. Fathers seems to have a gentle buddy approach, the kind of guy you might discuss anything from an outing with the kids to practical gadgets. It is above all for men who want to devote more time to their children. We spoke to publisher and creative director Wojciech Ponikowski.
Fathers Quarterly was launched to inspire fathers in many ways, and we believe that the idea of fatherhood is in the process of being reinvented, And we see that not only in Poland, but around the world. It's made for fathers who don't want to get stuck in any particular model of fatherhood. And we believe we will find our readers around the globe.
Someday you will speak of me. Held up in Highland, child with hazel eyes.
We could see a huge niche for this subject, and we see that idea of fatherhood is in the process of being reinvented, redefined, and we have found it very interesting to talk about it. We also love publishing, and this is kind of idea we've been looking for. Magazine is compact, it's more MOOC, something between magazine and book, or bookazine, as some others name it. It's a compact size, and it's 144 pages, designed with just one typeface, Chronicle Type, by Hoeffler and company. And it's designed with simple grids to encourage reading. It's designed more like a book than a magazine. Printed on Munken paper, it's bulky, soft and warm paper used to produce books. We've decided to make the magazine on it and to print color photography on that because of this incredible feel of it. And we wanted to get the feeling of something printed long time ago, and that is soft and warm. The article, I would say, it's interesting to describe white perspective of our magazine would be the digital natives in a world of hyper-consumerism by Edwin Bendick. And it says about digital natives, the young generation. It's about young people who are working to create a new world of their own with new tools. They reveal their creative and innovative potential. And recognition is a big step to understand, but it's still not enough. And I believe this text gives us a very interesting perspective of modern fatherhood. And we as adults, we control most of institutions of the real world. And if we don't update them using the logic of digital world, and we will lose the potential offered by young generation and digital natives. And I believe this article gives us a wider perspective, not only of fathers, of little kids, toddlers, newborns, but that describes also our point of view and our idea to show fatherhood in wider perspective.
And that was Wojciech Podakowski, publisher and creative director of Polish magazine Fathers. And that story is from Warsaw. And we've got a copy of Fathers right here. I'm going to pass it to you, Rob. He was talking about something which is soft and warm.
Yes.
And well, why don't you unwrap it?
Because he's soft, warm, and bulky.
Soft, warm, and bulky. Exactly.
Well, it's got a nice
at 144 Munken pages.
Munken pages.
Mm.
So it's wrapped in a nice piece of this is very sort of organic looking material. It's dressed in brown paper. Let's go for it.
He was talking about what you could do with neutrals.
Mm.
And this really is. So it's. Got quite a trendy looking dad on the front.
Yeah.
His little blonde boy, curly hair, asleep over his shoulder. The perfect image of fatherhood, perhaps. And it's got that, how would we describe the photography? I suppose it's got that sort of, that washed out, sort of, you can do food like it, you can do fashion
yes.
like it,
yes.
you can do
yes.
interiors like
you
it.
You can do lots of indie magazines like it.
It's quite a Portland look, I would suggest.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's got that kind of faded, washed out. Yeah, it's lots of neutrals. It looks very handsome.
That's a good story, Rob.
What, the photography?
No, who took the RT out of from Portland to Poland, right?
Yeah, that's it. That is. Quick, don't let that end up on the show or someone will steal that.
Exactly.
Idea. I'll give it over to Peter, see what he thinks about fathers out of Poland.
Which are now, it's an aspirational state, isn't it?
Mm.
You think people might think, I want to be a father, I'm not actually there yet.
Mm. It was interesting because the Polish embassy is very close to our offices, and that's not the image of fathers that I see lining up in front of the embassy.
No, exactly. No, it's more like 20 Mayfair and a puffer jacket.
Exactly.
I think that's for mothers to give to husbands as fathers. Mm.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
You've got it.
I think that's what it's for, isn't it?
But there's a lot of good stuff coming out of Poland at the moment. Yeah. Peter, you've been whizzing through it. Is there any advertising in it? I can't.
Not much.
No.
Is there any?
Well, that brings us then to the uncrate. No.
Well, exactly.
I'd say congratulations on Fathers. No. It's a nice size.
Send it my way. I'm going to swap you.
What would you say? A5 as well?
I would say it's A5, and it's priced at 15 euros. It's 15 euros, 20 US dollars. At 12 pounds, it's 15 Swiss francs. You know, that's expensive. I'm not sure what the total print run was. But, you know, I think like so many of these things, these are just, you know, if they manage to wash their face, then I think often these publishers are quite happy with these exercises.
Yeah.
Now, Rob, you've brought in a magazine that was brought back by our creative director from our agency, our sister agency, Wink Creative, something called Uncrate.
Yeah, so Maris brought this back from New York this morning. In fact, it's called Uncrate. It's out of New York, and it calls itself a magazine. Price range in this issue in the inside cover,
instead like this.
In lieu of there being an advert, that it says price range in this cover, 98 cents to $665,000, which I presume is a trope that they will roll out throughout their august history to come. Mm. And I think the premise is that someone, you, the reader, goes on a journey, and it looks like a kind of these journeys through the great, you know, almost like a great American road trip.
Right.
And these are all the things that you could buy. And it looks like, as you said, Tyler, this issue has been heavily subsidized by Land Rover, Range Rover.
Yes.
So there's a Land Rover Defender on the cover, and it goes through, and there's a vintage Range Rover, and there's a Freelander. There's all sorts of different things. There's Moncler coats you can buy. There's Timberland shoes. There was a nice Braun watch.
It's a nice Braun watch.
That
very
Peter
cheap.
Liked.
I How much it is? That? Mm. It's about $200.
So let's send them a link to the podcast.
Peter, do you think that this is more than a maglog, but this is a journey in some fine, well, once British vehicles, now Indian owned, that take us across America to, of course, you know, gather goods?
I think it's quite nifty. And you can think, if you had a curated experience which was priced exactly, and if you got the right 12, let us say, curated experiences, go to X with Y and price everything. It's like Andy Warhol being interviewed about his day, and he gave you all the receipts, which I can remember that from an age ago. He gave you all the receipts. I quite like the idea of this. I mean, slightly too tasteful for me, but nonetheless, and of course, too out there.
Mm, but what, missing the grid of the road, Peter?
No.
I want less
taste and less grit. And it doesn't have to, you know, an experience, an adventure. It doesn't have to be quite a Land Rover adventure. It can be, you know, a holiday somewhere a bit more squishy.
I would like to have seen that. I'd like to see an 80s version of that magazine. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see Duran Duran on a yacht in Saint-Tropez.
Exactly.
Version of that magazine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'd like to see all the receipts for that.
There's an interesting thing as well about the idea that this is sponsored, as we're suggesting it might be, by Land Rover, and it's a big shopping trip essentially.
Do you think
it's funny? Is that what those cars are for now?
I want to ask both of you. I mean, Rob, we'll start with you. Do you think that this is an idea born from a passionate editor, or was it something that was dreamt up by an agency to actually deliver a concept for a company which is famous for four-wheel drives?
It's a very good question. I mean, I don't know. I'd love to know. I'd love to think that it was someone trying to do something interesting in editorial, but I wouldn't be
surprised.
And also
with a good business model behind it as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we won't put any advertising in it, but if you'd like to be part of this journey, if you'd like to be the hotel at the end of the day one, or you'd like to be the car on day two that they pick up from the hire company or whatever, then that's an interesting thing. And I wonder if it's the first time that someone's tried to do it, and this is the first time it's got off the ground.
Peter, are readers cynical of things like this when, again, absence of advertising, but then it is just, we see Range Rovers and Land Rovers throughout?
People are cynical of these kinds of things. You want to, I certainly want to know who set this up, even though it's interesting. even though some of the stuff is interesting. I want to know who set it up and why and how. Mm. I mean, it does look very Land Rover-y. But it's a brand. My Land Rover is, of course, is a brand, a good Indian brand I like.
Now, before you came into the studio, I was talking to Andrew and our creative director, Richard Spencer-Powell, just about, you know, we saw the relaunch last week of the New York Times magazine. We see this, you know, incredibly dense thing, which the Wall Street Journal now puts out, you know, several weekends across the year, WSJ magazine. And what's interesting about those is that those are good old newspaper supplements, trying to, of course, co-opt some glossy values, but they're just full of a lot of honest advertising.
Yes.
And are we moving back into a place, Peter, where that's what the reader wants? Advertise to me when you've got something to flog. I don't care if it's a necklace or a dress or a watch. And then just give me good editorial and enough blurring right now.
The two very separate. Well, yeah. we've had a lot of stuff about that in the UK recently, about that blurring. And about the hollowing out of journalism.
Yeah.
And I think people are conscious of it. I'm certainly acutely conscious. Every search I do, I'm thinking, who's behind this entirely ridiculous name? And, you know, what agency, what lobby group, whatever, is behind this?
Mm.
And it's very boring to have to go through a lot of dross to get to anything definable and accountable.
I guess the difference is a start between the advertising and the editorial, as it should be in that, where the advertising there is given the freedom to be really quite regional, perhaps. It's an American brand. It's preaching to America. It's trying to get Americans to buy it, or British or European or Japanese, whatever it might be. And that's really nice, because I've talked to ad executives, ad creatives, talking about the death of copy in advertising, and how everything has to be a universal brand, like the future is you, or something like this, which could be for a watch, or more. It tends to always be for a car, which is this meaningless international kind of Esperanto, which means nothing in any language, and therefore everything in every language.
Well, John Hegarty told me last year that something like 90% of the briefs that he gets are essentially at least international, possibly global.
Mm.
And that reduces his options. Mm. You know, 30 years ago, he could have used local, in this case, local culture, local references, local language, longish copy if you wanted to. If it's going to be that kind of international advertising, all you can do is an Oprah-like, journey-like, upbeat strapline. And a very important picture, maybe of a handbag.
Or a car going through a city at speed. I think it's
interesting how you mentioned that, because I was thinking back to when you used to pick up copies of Forbes magazine, Fortune, in the 1960s, when this was a magazine about America venturing out into the world. Mm. But that copy of Fortune, you couldn't buy it at Hong Kong Airport. It might have made the ride on a Cathay Pacific aircraft or a JAL DC-8 or something. But nevertheless, what was great, though, is that there was long copy.
Yeah.
Long copy.
You would see, I don't know, they were trying to maybe sell you a cruise through the South Pacific, or they were trying to sell you a Chevrolet. But no one was scared of four paragraphs.
Mm. And it was beautifully written. And I think that's always the thing. That's what, you know, I missed that. I had lunch with Peter Mead, who's the Mead and Abbott Mead Vickers, a couple of weeks ago with Andrew, and we talked about exactly the same thing. There was a great book that came out at the end of last year about the Volkswagen campaigns from the 60s to the 90s, and that was that classic thing where three quarters of the page was a picture of the car, or the joke on the picture of the car, the iconic Beetle, obviously, in the Gulf. And then it had just the bottom quarter of the page was copy, really dense copy, beautifully written, written as an in-joke to people that had read adverts like that before.
Do we get back there as we have more English language schools around the world, Peter?
Well, let's hope so, because interestingly, the first, you're talking about Birnbach, early Birnbach,
exactly,
and stuff. And the more fruity copy will have been written by somebody more like
David Abbott.
David Abbott or David Ogilvy.
Yeah.
That's English fruitiness as against the Birnbach Brooklynese sharpness. But it's all about words. It's still all about words. And now you have to forsake words. Words are a luxury if you're doing international markets. And that's, for me, a disbenefit.
Me too. But I don't also think the photography is particularly great. It's not like we're getting an amazing, iconic image either, is it?
Just as a footnote to all of that, your point. I was talking to an airline the other day, and they said, we don't need to go and charter a Cessna or a Chopper anymore to go and photograph, to go and make their whole film sequence of their new 7879 going over the Alps. It's, you know, we can just do it in CGI.
Yeah.
As much as it's as accurate.
That's really sad, isn't it? We've got, well, very sad, yeah, we're going to get exceptionally discursive. But yeah, there's a wonderful picture, a book of pictures I've got upstairs.
You can do it on your show if
pictures
you want.
Taken from Swiss Airliners. From Swiss Airlines. Yeah. Really lovely. Beautiful.
Yeah. Rob Bound, our culture editor. Thanks very much, Peter. Always very, very good to see you. That brings us to the end of this 131st edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. I have to say that today's program was produced by David Plutzen. He's not here today. He's going to have a number of very, very fine dispatches from Bavaria next week. Our studio manager was Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And remember, we're back at the same time next Saturday. And if you want to listen again, then please do at, well, certainly at monocle.com or iTunes, or also via SoundCloud. But for now, for me, goodbye.